Right, starting my recording. Alright. Welcome back, fiends, to Hand of Whisker, presented by the Slash and Cast Podcast Network. Our show discusses horror movies and the phobias they emphasize. Throughout March, we've been taking a closer look at hibernophobia and the dislike of Ireland and Irish people. Before I introduce tonight's film and my co-host, just a few general reminders. You can stay connected with us over on X at Handle With Scare. Be sure to join us for our Twisted Tuesday and Thursday watch parties, which are held every Tuesday and Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time, and that is over at kick.com/tumblydrunk. With that being said, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Grindhouse Zombie. And Grindhouse, it should come as no surprise that, we needed to sneak at least one undead affair into the week, and we have a little micro-budget zombie flick in Dead Meat. This was another one that had been highly recommended to me ever since it came out. And I have to say, like, I, for the most part, just, like, reading more about it, how it came to be and whatnot. Now, I haven't seen the, I want to say it was, like, based on a short film from the same guy who did this. I haven't seen that. I need to go back and watch that to see, like, what, like, the early pitch was. But I was thoroughly impressed by what this movie was able to do with the budget that it had, and it really is just a great piece of indie filmmaking, which really helped open the door for a lot of others coming out of Ireland.
Well, okay, so let's be honest here. I mean, this movie came out, I think it was 2004, if I'm correct. So we're right kind of in the sweet spot for what was mad cow disease at the time, right? I mean, and even going further and talking about other films that it opened up the door for, I mean, Zombieland. Come on. So, I mean, Zombieland, you know, mad cow turned mad burger. So, I mean, and for the movie and for this, for its budget, I mean, there were so many people that called it, you know, the best zombie movie of the time, you know, for what it was. But it was made for like 110 grand. I mean, and that's, you know, for 110 grand, you can't buy a house, you know. So, I mean, putting all that into perspective, this is, it's got a lot of Night of the Living Dead vibes. I mean, there's you can't ignore it, which is okay. I mean, it's okay if you start with what is the best and you kind of trail off from there and do what you're going to do. But there's not a ton of Irish zombie movies out there. There's, for what there is, there's really only one or two that are even watchable. And this is the best of them. So, I mean, you can't really argue this. I mean, and, you know, to use the Irish countryside as your backdrop and to use it really effectively, too. I mean, these are just people that went out and, like, shot scenes of just the Irish countryside. I mean, and it's so damn beautiful. You can't deny that. And just to, so some of this, there are definitely scenes in here where it's like, well, maybe you're lingering on the countryside a little too long. But at the same time, that's okay because it's so beautiful and it's giving people that are not in Ireland, from Ireland, or have ever visited Ireland, just a little taste of what it's like. And this movie, the way it's done and the way it's, I mean, it's so simple. There's like six people in the cast, right? I mean, like six. I mean, so it's like, how do you not compare it to Night of the Living Dead, but at the same time, it's really easy to look at this and say that there are some things that were done a little better and things that they had a little more fun with. And the characters, I think, and how they let the characters evolve is one of those things.
Absolutely. So Dead Meat, for our plot, an infection spreads from slaughtered animals to humans, which causes the dead to rise and feed on the living. And this was written and directed by Connor McMahon. And as you mentioned, it is set in the countryside, specifically Leitrim, where Helena and Martin are driving down this desolate road. There, they run into a little bit of trouble as they hit one of the locals with their car. When they discover that the man is dead, they basically haul his body into the back seat of the car and hope to come across a nearby house in order to, you know, seek out some help. But, you know, turns out that the man isn't quite as dead as they had initially believed, because he does reanimate back to life. He ends up biting Martin, leaving Helena alone, searching for help. And this is when she comes across this farmhouse where, you know, her boyfriend reanimates, basically attacks her. And, you know, he meets kind of like his demise. But a lot of this, as you mentioned, is Helena kind of just like wandering the countryside where she does eventually meet up with Desmond, who I want to say, I think he's either supposed to be like a gravedigger or he's a farmer. He's one of the two.
Gravedigger. That's what he is. He's a gravedigger. But based on his skills, you really could go either way.
Yeah, yeah, that is 100% true. And, you know, together, the two of them are looking to fight their way through the increase in hordes of undead, basically trying to fight for their survival. Now, I will say, like, this movie doesn't have as much going on. This is a very lean plot. You know, the runtime of this movie also extremely lean in itself, because I want to say, like, it was only, like, what, 78, 79 minutes?
It was short. Yep.
Not a very long movie, but it does make it very digestible and easy to sit through. Now, as you mentioned, micro-budget, and this was kind of like the first film that was released under a new funding scheme by the Irish Film Board. Basically, like this film board, their goal was to encourage more independent filmmakers to produce films using a micro-budget. Now, with this movie, the crew would basically look to repurpose any sort of like donated set pieces. You know, they would go down to the local pub to recruit extras for the movie as well. Now, again, you know, there's only like six people in the cast, so they didn't really have to look too much in this case. But it was the first title to be launched under the Frightfest Presents DVD label. And for those who don't know, Frightfest is like basically like the biggest film festival, like, you know, in Europe, essentially, and a lot of the horror stuff comes straight out of there, and that's where you see a lot of the big premieres in that case. But very hands-on approach to this movie. You know, it does have a lot of DIY, like, zombie gore in the flick as well. We do have a little bit of unconventional kills, which, you know, is always great to see, because, like, you know, There are some movies that just, you know, you see something for the first time and you're like, oh, wow, that's badass. And then, like, you don't really get to see that sort of thing again. It's just a very rare occurrence, especially for, you know, people like us who digest so much horror. So anytime we get thrown something new, it really makes us excited.
Well, when you have your gravedigger who utilizes his shovel over and over and over again, but in ever-increasing artistic and fun ways. I mean, it just, I think it's one of those rare zombie movies where, I mean, you know, as much as you do have one or two characters that come in with the guns, it's one of those rare ones where they don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not the main focus, and your main character is not some, you know, AR-15 toting yahoo who's just going to come in and save the day. You have a guy and his shovel. And it's brilliant in the way that it makes him your hero, but he's almost sort of a hero by accident. You know, it's just by circumstance, and that makes Desmond just that much more fun to watch, because most of what he does is by panic or by accident, and I mean, and there's not a lot of movies that like play up to that. I mean, you definitely have a few. You know, one of the movies I can think about that where you have our heroes being heroes by accident is The Boondock Saints. And this movie reminds me a little bit of that, where he has so many moments where he does things just through sheer panic or by accident. But it makes it fun to watch, because as a zombie aficionado, it's like, if this were to actually happen, most of what you would be doing would be by accident or by just through sheer panic. So it makes it, for lack of a better word, like more approachable, more real world. Like, this is just what would happen. You come around the corner and just go and swing your shovel, and whatever happens, happens. And I think that's a big piece of why, as low budget as this is, and I know it's low budget, so I don't want to have that argument, because I think it's not needed. But you have this guy, he encounters a girl from another country. She's hot. I mean, and you go through all these things, and it, like, as much as it makes for a great zombie movie, it also makes for like a great Penthouse forum letter. So it's like, why not just enjoy it for what it is and just kind of roll with it?
Yeah, this is definitely more of the approach of, okay, what do we have at our disposal? Okay, we're going to use it. You know, sometimes all it takes is just the simple approach of just a man and his shovel. Or in this case, you know, with our female lead, you know, sometimes maybe you bring, you know, some house cleaners into the mix with, you know, like vacuums, basically sucking out the eyeball of your zombie boyfriend.
Well, but I think that's what makes this movie beautiful, is that as much as you can tell that they use what they had, it never comes off as desperate filmmaking. It never comes off that way. It comes off as people that were having a lot of fun with what they were doing. And if there's a movie that I could compare it to, I would compare this movie to Flesh Eater, where it was just people that were out in the woods or out in the countryside, drinking beer, having fun, making a movie, and let's just make it as good as it can be, because we've got a few bucks to throw at this. But they were also very cognizant of, well, you know what? Let's make sure when we're spending our money, we're like making an impact. And they did a great job of it. And using the scare of mad cow disease, because at the time, mad cow disease was a thing. And the transmission of a prion disease like mad cow from animal to human was a huge scare. And it impacted so many different countries' economies that, I mean, it's, for the time, it's super relevant. I mean, and people that were around then and people that went to a McDonald's or a Jack in the Box or whatever it is at the time, like, knew the impact. So it was simple, cheap, effective, and smart filmmaking all at the same time.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, when it comes to just really any zombie film, of course, you know, we do take influence from Night of the Living Dead, which you had mentioned earlier. Helena does have a very striking resemblance to Barbara, which mm-hmm. includes like the whole like beige colored costume piece that she wears. We also have a great homage to the zombie arm dream scene out of Day of the Dead, which was fantastic, which I really appreciate. So I love when we get like these homages, but they're never to the point where like, and this one, it doesn't feel too forced or overdone, because like at the end of the day, like, of course, like you can't really like make any sort of art without like, you know, drawn inspiration or, you know, taking something from something else. So I was great to see, though, that it wasn't just like one thing. Like, we got a little bit of progression, you know, basically like throughout the entirety of like that specific franchise, which was great to see, because so many times it's just like pinpointed on one specific thing. But Like, we don't just touch on Night of the Living Dead or Day of the Dead. You know, we got a little bit of, like, Sam Raimi. You know, we have several head decapitations in this movie. Sure, a lot of them are done via the shovel, because that is what Desmond has at his disposal. We have some eye gouging shots, you know, straight from, like, Fulci. You know, we also have the screwdriver in the ear as well. You know, like, there are so many, like, nods for, like, average horror fans to look at who are just going to look back at this and be like, okay, cool. Like, I love when we get those sort of, like, Easter eggs thrown in, because they're really, having those, like, little nuggets really adds to, like, the viewing experience.
Well, this is one of those rare movies where you can tell that they borrowed from, somewhere around the neighborhood of 100 other movies, but they did it so well and with their own spin that you sort of just let it go and you just enjoy it for what it is. I mean, the screwdriver in the ear, I mean, between Dawn of the Dead and then Return of the Living Dead Part 2, I mean, it's not, it's something that you've seen before and you know where it comes from, but they put their, you know, their own little sprinkle of spices on it where it made it something different, that it was like, it was okay. And you just, it just kind of made you like it even more. Now, again, going back to how this movie is very small budget, it's very small story. The story in this is just, I mean, it's as micro as the budget. And I completely acknowledge that. But at the same time, the movie is so fun to watch, and the gore is, you know, for this movie being 20 years old, is so fun and effective that it's like you can't hammer it in one place and just be like, well, they, you know, you can't slap your hand and go, well, they did this, because they didn't do anything poorly. They did everything to the best of their ability. And it's one of those rare movies where you know that, and you sort of applaud it for doing that. Like, you just, I know you guys had $5 to film this scene, and you spent $5.01. You went over budget, and you said screw it and did it anyway, and it just makes it so good.
I think the one thing that I looked back at when I rewatched this yesterday, before I was doing my show notes, I kept laughing at the fact that, like, really early on, you know, Helena's, like, doing all this running around, and the whole time she's just wearing high heels. And, you know, I just had to think, like, surely, like, that isn't, like, the best footwear to be wearing in this sort of situation when you're trying to run away from these zombie hordes in this case. But I love the fact that it just takes that approach to, like, okay, like, we already use what we have at our disposal. Like, we have the stiletto kills in this movie, which makes all the sense in the world to, like, actually use them. But then at the same time, it's like, well, now you're just gonna be running around barefoot, like, the rest of the time. And, yeah, we all know how, like, these desolate roads are. Like, who knows what's gonna get stuck in your foot at the end of the day. But I love the fact that we got to see the high heels come into play with the kills, because, like, that's something that is so often overlooked that it just, like, never seems to, like, come across in the writer's room for, you know, whatever reason.
Well, I'm not going to judge your love for high heels, because I know where it comes from. And hey, good on you, man. But I think that's one of the places where they took a little bit of liberty between Night of the Living Dead and this one. And because, I mean, there's a scene in Night of the Living Dead where Barbara takes off her high heels because they're impeding her. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, they're like, you know what? These are not going to be an impedance. We're going to use these to our advantage. But I think that's what makes it smart filmmaking. It's like, well, you know what? I want to pay homage to this original movie, but at the same time, I want to do something slightly different. So it's like when they do those little scenes like that, and it's like, okay, I'm going to use my shoes that are uncomfortable as hell to walk in. I would not be able to run in. I probably would not be able to get away from a zombie in, but yet I'm going to kill a zombie with a high heel. So, I mean, it's just it. One of those simple but effective, and what makes for just, I mean, call it what it is, a fun watch. It's just fun to watch. You know, it's nothing more than that. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, I think the point in the movie, too, where things really start to get, like, more intriguing is when we do have, like, the expansion of the cast. So we do have Helena and Desmond basically, like, meeting up. Well, they meet an old man, his wife, and their young daughter here. And the five of them are looking to, you know, speed off in their Jeep, hoping to make it through the night and, you know, just find some safe passage. But, you know, we have, like, these characters who are, like, kind of at ends with one another because, like, obviously, like, the guy doesn't really want to help them initially, whether that's because, you know, she's an out-of-towner or, you know, for whatever reason. But, like, he's the only one who has a working vehicle in this particular situation. But I was laughing so fucking hard, like, when it pans over to, like, the wife. Because, like, you know, Helena and Desmond, like, mistake her for, like, a zombie, essentially. Because she does look very pale. And, like she's completely out of it. That she's, like, not human anymore, obviously. So you kind of, like, have, like, this weird tension building between the two. And then, like, when that ice finally breaks... You know, part of me kind of wishes that there were subtitles in this movie because, like, that old man was so hilarious in, like, his just delivery. But I think that kind of just added more to the experience because, like, I didn't always understand what the hell he was trying to say. But I was, like, so, like, drawn in by his presence on screen that I didn't really care at that point anymore.
Well, I think this came directly from Night of the Living Dead, and these were the Coopers. These were Harry, Helen, and Karen Cooper. So, and with Helen Cooper, when you first meet her, she definitely has that really dark hair but pale complexion sort of Bride of Frankenstein thing going on, so that makes absolute sense. I mean, that's kind of what she was. And the subtitle piece of it, I get that because there's definitely some spots in the original Night of the Living Dead where Harry Cooper is shouting and you can't understand a goddamn thing he's saying. You just know he's being belligerent. And it's like, well, okay, I get that you're mad, but what are you absolutely saying? But I thought that was really fun how they played that and they just kind of mixed it up a little bit. Like we know exactly what we're doing here and exactly what we're stealing from. But we're going to have fun with it, so take it for what it is. And I think they did a great job of that. You know, and Harry Cooper, when, you know, in the first movie, he is definitely the perceived aggro white male guy, you know, who's just kind of... And his character on the whole is somebody that we can all understand, but we can all also love to hate. And so he's kind of a real dichotomy when it comes down to it. And then when they did the 1990 remake, they sort of twisted that a little bit. And I think they took elements of both when they created that character. But with the exception of making him a little bit older, which was a kind of a little bit of a twist, and it was like... interesting that a guy that old would have like a teenage daughter. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, but then you look at the wife and you're like, huh. And then there's like there's a bunch of huh moments in there when you're watching it. But it I think it's taking something that you know is a staple of horror and, you know, try to twist it and make it your own. And it just keeps staying fun.
Yeah, there were a couple of other interesting tidbits. I think the other major callback that we had was with the cows themselves coming into play here when they are basically like stalking around the car, kind of like reminiscent of, you know, the T-Rex in Jurassic Park. The other part of this movie that just made me just kind of go like, huh. Okay, I didn't really quite know what to make of that, is the fact that in this movie, zombies sleep. But not only do they sleep standing up. And I'm just like, I just sat there thinking like, what the hell is going on here? Because it's like, we've had like situations like this kind of like happen before. Like, I think the one... for me that I always go back to is with Land of the Dead and whether or not zombies can cross water or can they swim, you know, because it's not something that's really been addressed in this case. But like sleeping zombies is definitely a new one to me, at least from what I remember. But But I just thought it was interesting, too, that, you know, they're just kind of, like, out in the field standing up, like, I don't know if they're, like, makeshift, like, scarecrows or what situation is there. But I thought it was a very interesting choice because I think, like, in other, like, creature features, or at least, like, things that involve, like, the deep or, you know, just underwater, like, we do kind of, like, have, like, the... like this, like the sleeping underground or like what lurks below type moments. And it kind of took that approach in this. But there was never like that kind of like, okay, like we need to like sneak around him type moment to like kind of like follow in suit of that.
Well, I think that's interesting because if when you look at the premise of the movie and it's like a mad cow disease sort of thing, right? And how it's a prion disease. It screws with your brain, does a bunch of these things. But the funniest part of it is that once they say mad cow and they go from there, then they don't really ever talk about it again. Like, and the symptoms don't really match what would happen. Zombies sleeping is interesting because there's been a couple of different things in, we'll call it the zombie culture, that have tried to address that. You know, 28 days later did it, you know, the zombies just sit until they have some sort of a stimuli. World War Z did it, you know, and unless they have a stimuli, they just kind of wander around and eventually they go kind of dormant and just kind of sit there. So one of the things for me as a zombie aficionado that's always been the most interesting, it's like, so when there's no humans around, what do zombies do? I mean, do they have a knitting club? Do they get together to have coffee? Do they have a book club? I don't know. But I think that's one of the, when you talk about zombies on the whole and you have a zombie outbreak, right? And like in this country, we have 370 or 380 million people. And let's say that 1% survive and the rest are zombies. And it's like, well, you know that 1% can't be food for them. You know that 1% can't be entertaining them somehow, like through chase or through whatever. And it's like, so what do they do? And I think it's one of like the seldom talked about things. And it's like, so what do zombies do in their downtime? And it's like, no one talks about it. So the sleep aspect of it, it was like, well, I guess I can see a world where zombies get tired. I mean, it's got to be exhausting walking around just going, you know, for 12 hours a day. That's like, I mean, they're definitely getting their steps in. They got their steps all day long, but I'm not sure they have their heart points, if you know what I mean. So I thought that was just kind of cool that they threw something different in there where it's like, and there's this time of day where it's like, and the zombies go night-night. Something different. And but that is like the crux of this whole movie, though. It's like everything they try to give you is something a little bit different, and so why not?
Yeah, absolutely. And I understand that viewpoint too, because like when I have nothing to do, like sure, I'll sleep too, like we'll just all just hibernate at that point in time. But yeah, so for the most part, like, as we mentioned, like, you know, with the plot being so lean and the runtime being so lean, it does ensure the fact, like, at no point does dead meat, like, overstay its welcome in this. You know, it really just flies by. And I laughed so hard, you know, kind of, like, reading up on this movie, just knowing, like, you know, regardless of, like, the micro budget, you know, you had Connor McMahon, who, you know, made this film look as stylish as he could, even if he was, you know, disappointed in the fact that, like, he had to use digital photography as part of the funding deal for, you know, this film. So, and obviously, like, he wants to do things his way, but that was just part of the deal to get the fund in. And, you know, sometimes that's just the perks of needing to get your film made. You know, you got to go out, you got to fund the movie. And, you know, obviously, like, they didn't have to raise, like, a ton of money by, like, any, like, by most standards in horror. But I just love the fact that, you know, outside of, I think, really the only other, like, micro-budget, like, DIY movie that I can think of, at least, is, like, One Cut of the Dead. It would be, like, another standout in similar vein. to that sort of like guerrilla filmmaking approach, which I know that also recently got remade. I don't think I've seen that one yet, but I don't think
I haven't.
They'd be able to either. Recapture the magic of the original in that case.
I doubt it, and there's a reason some things just shouldn't be remade. Yeah, you know. So, at some point in my life, I hope that I have the chutzpah to make a zombie movie, because I have an idea. I think it could be fun. I haven't made it for 1,000 different reasons, right? And this guy made his movie. I mean, and while I will fully acknowledge that it literally ripped off every single zombie movie that came before it, and it did. It ripped off, like, Romero zombies. It ripped off Russo zombies. I mean, it ripped off everybody. Raimi was most certainly in there, a little bit of Evil Dead vibe. I mean, everything. But when you can do that, and you can make a movie that is this short, this concise, this fun to watch, and it costs you 18 cents to make it, I mean, you've got something special. And Desmond especially was my favorite character. Him and his trusty shovel. Helena and her, like, little bit of obliviousness, but at the same time, like, she was from another country and she was visiting. I mean, and that makes it interesting just right there. And the fact that she can sort of, like, keep going. You know, am I going to call this the greatest zombie movie ever made? No. But at the same time, was it the greatest zombie movie ever made for $110,000? Good question. And, you know, when it comes to all the Irish horror that we've been talking about, it seems like Ireland, the country as a whole, the filmmakers, they tend to be really into the country's lore. And the fact that this one decided to take on what was, for lack of a better term, a mainstream issue that was directly affecting the United Kingdom at the time, because this, the whole mad cow disease thing had a huge impact on the United Kingdom's overall ability to produce beef and to send it to other countries, because there was a point where the whole world had basically a moratorium on UK beef. Like, nobody wanted it at all. So, I mean, he's talking about, in a lot of ways, also current affairs from the time. So, and sometimes that's not popular. People don't want to hear it. So, I mean, kudos. Kudos for just doing it and turning it into what is a great little low-budget zombie movie.
It is interesting too. You know, we kind of like have that end moment where they're kind of like putting everyone in the back of the truck after, like, the guys in, like, the hazmat suits show up, who are really the only ones who have any sort of guns and ammunition on hand to deal with. And I don't really know, like, quite what to make of the ending, primarily because it's like, a part of me was like, oh shit, are they just, like, rounding up everyone in the countryside? And are, like, are we going to have, like a shooting gallery type moment? Where it's like, all right, we're not taking any chances. We are just going to start cleaning to wipe out all of Ireland in this case. But to your point, like, with, like, how often, like, you're just shooting the countryside and whatnot. Like, it does kind of, like, feel at times like these Irish films are, like, using these films as, like a tourist advertisement. You know, visit Ireland, you know, come see, you know, the Hollow. But, you know, I don't know how many people are going to be wanting to wander in the dark forests. But, you know, that could just be me.
Well, from the tourist aspect, I mean, honestly, like, who wouldn't, right? I mean, let's promote our country and do whatever else. But I also think the very end is has a very Ireland versus Northern Ireland vibe to it, where we've got this sort of well-armed military presence versus these sort of freedom fighters. And I think Helena and Desmond are freedom fighters. That's who they are. So, you know, and I don't want to get into the whole IRA converse. I don't want to do all that. But I think that's where that comes from. And it was sort of a half-staff middle finger to the establishment about, like, okay, you know, we recognize your prominence as a military force, but we don't want to submit to your rule. I mean, and that's why even today we have Ireland and Northern Ireland, you know? And when you drive between the two, there is a point where you get stopped and guys with machine guns get you out of your car, ask you who you are and what you're doing. And then once you prove that you're just a stupid American tourist, they just go, get back in your car, get out of here. We don't have time for this. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what that was, is that kind of that giant, like, we're acknowledging that there's still some strife here in this country, but things are better, but we're not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what that was.
Yeah, we also do kind of have kind of like our tidbit moments of like getting the updates on like the current affairs, or at least like what the landscape is currently looking like with the outbreak. And of course, much like with Night of the Living Dead, a lot of that is done via, you know, the radio transmissions in this case. So just another one of like nod to kind of like add on to the belt in that case. But I will say though, like the subtextual like commentary, I don't think it's as heavy-handed as like obviously like Night of the Living Dead was at its time. But you know, again, like you did mention it, it does have this depiction of mad cow disease, which was a current affair at the time. And you know, I thought using that as kind of like the reasoning behind like the zombie outbreak, was an interesting choice, but I do like so much of this kind of focuses more so on this sort of like environment that has like a lot of like rural desolation. You know, we do see a lot of the countryside, which has seen some better days. We also have a lot of just like the decay in regards to like, you know, the maggot infested carcasses of like these animals around the countryside as well.
Well, I think that's the whole thing with the mad cow disease. Because at the time, things were... And like we talked about this earlier, we talked about like communication between countries and communication between different places. People weren't really talking, so people didn't know what was going on. And so I think at the time, I mean, I don't think people understand that like when mad cow disease broke out, when it like broke out... and like everyone's heard the term mad cow disease, but like, what does it actually mean? Right. And so when mad cow disease was, we'll call it, established in the UK, when it was actually a thing, I mean, it was not, you know, the funny videos of a cow going meow just uncontrollably. It was, you know, animals that were walking around their pens listless and were rubbing against things and didn't know what they were doing. And then they, you know, they eventually died of basically what was lethargy. That's what, you know, because their brains were coming apart. And when this disease crossed the brain barrier and was able to be transmitted to other animals and other animals and us being humans, including in that animal category, that was a big deal. So, you know, to take that thought and to turn it into a zombie movie, especially this close to what was something that had a global impact on a lot of countries' abilities to be capitalistic and to sell their products, and to, you know, it had a negative impact on the UK's GDP for years, you know. So to do it and to take a movie and make a movie out of it and but at the same time, still be able to have a little bit of fun with it was a bold move. And I'm just glad somebody did it, because a lot of times with these, with movies and with the cinema that we see, taking advantage of something when it's fresh and when it's hot is a hard thing to do, and most people don't want to touch it. And so it's nice to see that Ireland was like, well, you know what? We have this this government grant program, and we're going to just go with it, and let's see what happens. I think it was bold, and I think it was fun, and it resulted in low budget, but still a pretty solid zombie movie.
Yeah, touching on current affairs in a film is like such a rarity. Really, the only sort of like medium that we see that in that is constantly revolving around it. Honestly, like the only thing that comes to mind for me is South Park. South Park is like really the only sort of media that is constantly just hammering away at whatever is going around in the current times. And I think that's just a lot of it. Just revolves around the fact that they are able to churn out episodes a little bit more quickly than some of these other animated series out there. But, you know, they've been doing it for so long at this point, it just really feels like second nature. Whereas, you know, in filmmaking, you know, depending on, like, the time of the shoot, like, this, if it was, like, something more minor, you know, like, that window could have already closed by the time, you know, filming even wrapped in some cases, because, you know, like not everything is being shot like rush shot in like 2 weeks. You know, a lot of these films are being made anywhere from like shooting in like, you know, 4 weeks to like several months at this point. And that's not even including anything to do with, you know, post-production or anything like that. So, you know, for them to get it out in, you know, a timely manner and for it to come out when this stuff is still happening is a really rare occurrence, so that's another win in the column in this case for this movie.
Well, absolutely. And knowing that they took this subject matter, and the thing that they didn't do with this movie, which I found very interesting, but I also sort of appreciated, is that they did not dive into the science of it. Because, you know, there are some zombie movies where they dive into the science and it just, you get so laden down with all this information that it just doesn't become interesting. Because, you know, so I said it before, mad cow is a prion disease, and prions are very, very interesting. They're very interesting. And if you dig into what a prion actually is, and you find out that, you know, short of full on cremation of dead remains, you can't kill a prion. You could, If I had a prion disease and you buried me today and dug me up 100 years from now, I would still have active prions in me. It's so prions are scary as hell, and that's what mad cow disease. It's a prion disease. So what I loved about this movie is that they called it mad cow, but then they did not have to have that scientific adjunct, like, secondary story to it. They were just like, fuck it. Zombies, let's go. And that's awesome about it. That's one of the things that makes this movie so awesome, is that they did not have to burden me with that. Because, you know, I like to watch movies and I like to think, and but like sometimes I like to just watch a movie because it's fun. And I love the fact that they didn't do that, because with their budget and with the subject matter, it could have very it could have very easily turned into a science project. And they didn't do that. They just made it fun. And you know what? Good job, folks. Good fucking job, because this movie's fun.
Yeah, sometimes all you want to do is, you know, basically, like, lean on the outside of your Jeep window and go around decapitating zombies.
Hell yes. Way,
like you're bashing mailboxes.
You know what? I go to bed at night and I have dreams about the different ways I would kill zombies. So, you know what? This is the movie that made me understand that it's okay to have those dreams.
Well, there you go. And also shows you how many usages you can get out of a shovel.
It's not just for digging holes.
That is absolutely true. Or in this case, also vacuum cleaners being another another interesting use. You know, sometimes you got to clean out other sort of matters. But anyways, so check out Dead Meat. It's, I'm trying to remember if I rented this one or if it was streaming somewhere. But definitely an entertaining to watch. Only 78 minutes, very digestible horror movie for you guys. Go check this one out. Hibernophobia is wrapping up next week. We have The Devil's Doorway, which was another first-time watch. It was interesting that, like, you know, we kind of had a mix of, like, first-time watches and also repeat viewings in this case. So to, like, finish the month out with, like, two movies that I had never seen is probably something that won't happen again, because we rarely do focus on, like, new releases, let alone, you know, stuff that has just been sitting on the watch list forever. You know, we all just kind of, like, have, like, that... Well, I was on a podcast called Pile of Shame, which was kind of like our, like, backlog of video games or just movies or TV series, and these two were definitely on my list, so good to knock both of them out in this case. But also, The Devil's Doorway... You know, just with the current times and the current release that we have in theaters, felt like the right time. It's also a found footage movie for all you found footage fans out there. So it is also streaming on Shudder. So that is next on the agenda for us. And of course, we'll be unveiling our next phobia on that episode as well. I will say, though, like, I am out of town next week. I'm leaving on Wednesday. I'll still be streaming on Tuesday night for Twisted Tuesday. So, of course, that will feature whatever our first reviewed movie for April is going to be. So stay tuned for that. We'll let you know on Sunday what that is going to be. But in the meantime, yeah, definitely go check this out. Go check out the new, you know, theatrical offerings that are out there to you. They've been, honestly, like, I was compared to, like, the other... theater releases this year a lot better, which I'm happy to say. I have been hearing some not so great things about Stain, which is one of, like, the upcoming, like, spider flicks, which was one of the trailers we saw on Late Night with the Devil, or at least it was on my showing.
Same here. Yeah.
So. Not sure if that changes my my thoughts on that, but, you know, it's definitely an interesting time. But it feels like we're kind of, like, hit that spot in the year where it's like, okay, we finally have some standouts. So, like, maybe we're turning a new leaf at this point in time. But either way, I'm glad we finally have a couple of standouts and probably, you know, one or two that might actually make our best of. At the end of the year. Only time will tell on that front.
Well, the preview for Sting looked just not good. Mm-hmm. But I've seen previews that look not good, and they're better than I thought. I still thought, and I know you disagree, but I still thought that Night Swim was not that bad. It wasn't great, but it was not that bad. So, but I mean, and we've talked before, I mean, we're horror nerds. We digest everything that comes out. All that I want to happen is for people to keep making horror movies. Mm-hmm. Just keep doing it. Because honestly, it's what I live for. So just, keep my inner tree fungus / zombie / gaping hell's mouth fed, and I'll be happy. So just keep doing it, please, because otherwise, I'm a robot. I'm getting up. I'm doing what I do. I need something to keep me human, and horror is what keeps me human. So just keep it up. Keep up the good to mediocre to even bad work. I'm fine with all of it.
Yeah, because if you don't, then, you know, Grindhouse over here is probably just going to be standing sleeping up at that point, because he's not going to have anything to watch.
You're assuming I don't do that already. you should have seen me Friday night in Chicago. Yeah, I just about slept standing up. So, I horror is a funny thing. And the people that don't get horror would ask, why do you watch horror? Mm-hmm. Like, why would you watch that? And what I would say to you is this. Because I want to live in a place where people are constantly challenging the status quo. They're constantly breaking boundaries. And moreover, for somebody who is 50 years old now, I want to find that person that can scare me. Mm-hmm. Because I haven't been scared in a while. And the person that scares me will have my undying adoration. So if you like to go to church, if you like to go to your flea market, if you like to go grocery shopping and cook food, and those are the things that make you happy, you know what? Good for you. What makes me happy is being scared. And that's why we're here. So please keep it up. Please, please, please keep it up. Because I'm just starting to get thin. But let's... we'll see.
Right on. So again, join us on Sunday for our The Devil's Doorway episode. Mm-hmm. And if not then, of course, we will see you guys back on Tuesday for our next watch party. And we'll let you guys know what we're watching on our next episode. But I hope you guys enjoy your week. Be sure to join us on Thursday for Easter, Bunny Easter, which is going to be either really great or really terrible. Only time is going to tell on that front. But, you know, Easter is basically upon us. You know, let's all go eat our just egregious amounts of candy and maybe watch Jackalope just decapitate a ton of people. I don't know. I don't know what that movie's going to have in store for us, but I'm looking forward to it nonetheless. And it's going to be a B-movie, so we might have a little bit of fun along the way, provided it offers all of the bees involved in that. But in the meantime, you guys, enjoy your week. Have a good night, and we will catch you on the next one.
See y'all.